Welcome to Students Incorporated. I'm your host, Mr. Jason. Join me weekly as my team and I produce content that's informative, positive, fun, and uplifting. This podcast is created and produced with the help of students from the International Community School of Bangkok. Today's episode is packed with great conversations, inspiring stories, and a brand new adventure you won't want to miss. I'm joined again by co-hosts Mia and Frank. First up, we have the amazing opportunity to talk about leadership, why it matters, how it shapes young minds, and how we can all grow as leaders. And who better to discuss this with us than our elementary school principal? Plus, we'll hear two incredible fifth graders read their leadership essays. Trust me, this is one of the best parts. Then, for segment two, get ready, we're launching the highly anticipated sequel to our hit adventure story, The Secrets of El Dorado. This new chapter, Legends of the Yucatan, brings back familiar faces, introduces new characters, and takes you on a thrilling journey packed with danger, suspense, and hidden mysteries. But first, before we get started, let's hear our quote of the day and get some headline news.
Our quote of the day comes from John C. Maxwell, American author, speaker, and pastor. A leader is one who knows the way, goes the way, and shows the way. The quote emphasizes how a leader should act. A true leader must have the experience and knowledge to anticipate what lies ahead, as well as the awareness and understanding of the present moment. They must navigate with wisdom and foresight, ensuring that those who follow them are guided in the right direction. However, leadership isn't just about intellect and strategy. It also requires a brave and kind heart. True leaders lead with heart, not force. We wholeheartedly believe that fifth graders here today are truly capable of demonstrating these qualities, and we wish them all the best. And that's our quote of the day. Now on to some headline news with Mia.
Thank you for our quote of the day, Frank. Now, celebrating the fifth grade leaders here today, we want to introduce three great leaders in history, leading their people through heart, intellect, and not force. All right, our first great leader would be Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte from France. He was an excellent military strategist and ruler. He reformed France's legal system with the Napoleonic Code and modernized the economy. He also expanded the French Empire in every direction imaginable. Despite his eventual downfall, his impact on the world history and warfare remained significant. Next up, we have Mansa Musa from the Mali Empire. Now, as many people know, Mansa Musa here is the richest man in history. With his intelligence and charisma, trade, culture, and Islam in West Africa flourished. One fun fact would be that when he was performing the pilgrimage to Mecca, he gave away so much gold to the people in the areas that the price fell and the people asked Mansa Musa to take it back. All right, our final leader would be our local hero, King Thaksin the Great. He was the king of Thailand after Ayutthaya fell to the Burmese. He reunified Thailand and moved the capital to Thonburi, thus establishing the Thonburi dynasty. After the war, he revived the Thai culture, trade, and economy, and expanded Thai influence over parts of Cambodia, Laos, and southern Thailand. That ends our news for this episode.
Thank you for the quote and the headline news. For our first segment, we welcome to our studio Mrs. Donnie, elementary school principal, and two young leaders from the fifth grade, Leo and Jimin. We'll start off with a few questions first, and then we'll let Leo and Jimin read their leadership essays. Mia will get us started.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. So to get us started, we have a few questions for Mrs. Donnie, and then we'll have a few questions for Leo and Jimin. All right. So Mrs. Donnie, from your experience, how can learning leadership skills at a young age help children develop confidence and resilience?
Well, I think when students learn about what strong leadership looks like, they will learn that leaders can be, they can be quiet, they can be shy, or bold, or brave, boisterous. All of these characteristics can be seen in famous leaders throughout history. This can give the confidence to all students that they can be a leader if they are kind and caring. Students will succeed and fail at leadership as they grow up. And it's really important because resilience is learned through experiencing difficulties. Whether those difficulties come from the outside or the difficulties come because of a bad choice the students make. Leaders learn from their mistakes and the mistakes of others. And I believe that is resilience, learning and growing through difficulties.
Thank you. And that makes sense. So my next question is this. How does teaching and leadership to kids encourage them to take responsibilities for their actions and decisions?
Well, a true leader will have followers. So student leaders begin to understand the effects of their actions on their followers when others are either praised or punished because of actions that were followed by the leader's example. Leaders need to be aware of how others are feeling, and they need to be quick to apologize when their words or their actions or their decisions cause other people's pain.
Yeah, that's a very, really good point that you made about, empathy, in leadership. And in what ways do you think, does children learning about leadership, how does it help them become better problem solvers and critical thinkers?
Oh, problem solvers. That's one of our four Bs, you know.
Oh.
We're professional problem solvers in the elementary. We talk a lot about it. And starting as early as in K-4, teachers are helping students think through each and every problem that a kid faces. That can be from a broken crayon to a sad heart because a friend has said something unkind. And as students grow through the grades, teachers become more like coaches, guiding students in their thinking about how to solve their own problems and how to evaluate if the problem is a kid-sized problem or an adult-sized problem. It takes real critical thinking. I still use this skill today. To consider if a problem that I am trying to solve should be solved on my own, or maybe I need to take it to Mr. Luke for help.
Thank you for that. And now my final question is about working with other people. So describe how students can develop empathy and their abilities to work well with others when they learn about leadership.
Well, first of all, a student might see themselves as being a leader, but if they don't have anyone following them, they're not actually leading. And a real leader cannot force people to follow them. They might be able to use fear or prizes as a way to get people to do what they say. But a strong and caring leader is going to listen to those around them and have a heart that looks for ways to show them care and makes decisions that help many people, not just decisions that help themselves.
All right. Thank you for your answers, Mrs. Donnie. Now, we'd like to ask two questions to our young guests before they read their essays. All right, Leo, you can answer first and then Jimin. All right. My question is this. What does being a good leader mean to you?
Well, being a good leader to me means that, you are open-minded and, you're kind to everyone and treat them equally. And you don't force them to do things, and you just be kind to them.
Thank you.
For me, it's any person who can help others and give vision to others, such as encouragement and chasing dreams. They influence others, but also take gratitude for everything, as well as staying positive. They have to communicate and encourage people while being responsible as well.
All right, thank you both for those answers. Now, my second question for you is this. Could you share a time when you saw someone else showing leadership? All right, Jimin, you can start.
So one time I found someone showing leadership is when my friend, let me give a shout out to Pi R. And then when I was struggling with my math problems, she came to me and then she actually encouraged me to try myself and not to actually give up. So I'd like to thank Pi R for that.
All right. Thank you.
Please. So for me, this is a shout out to some of my two best friends, Joshua and Jobim. So outside of school, we've been working on a top secret project.
Top secret?
And
oh man.
Basically, sometimes there are disagreements about it, but we all showed everyday leadership by finding peaceful ways to compromise the problems, and we didn't end up having any fights or anything.
Can you tell us, give us a little hint at what the secret project is?
It has something to do with words.
Okay. Are you writing a book?
Maybe.
Oh.
Maybe not.
All right. Okay. I'll keep a lookout. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your answers. Now, it's time to read your essays. Jimin, we'll start with you. Go ahead and start when you're ready.
Dear students and everyone listening, no matter who you are, you can be a leader. Yeah, someone like a presidential leader might be hard, but you are not that kind of leader. You're an everyday leader. You don't have to have royal blood. I'm here to explain that it's actually not that hard. If you want to be a good role model to people younger than you and create a more peaceful environment, it is important you act like an everyday leader and show the way. John C. Maxwell once said, "A leader is one who knows a way, goes a way, and shows a way." The truth is, we can all be leaders, but you need the three key qualities of an everyday leader. A good leader has to be responsible, be kind and encouraging, and be a strong communicator. For starters, student leaders need to be responsible in order to lead well. Being responsible as a leader means that you need to be able to make good decisions and be honest about what you say. In addition, you also have to take responsibility for what you did. A quote from former U.S. President Dwight D. Eisenhower said, "Leadership consists of nothing but taking responsibility for everything that goes wrong and giving your subordinates credit for everything that goes well." I know some great leaders do something wrong and try to cover their mistakes up by lying. That does not make a true student or everyday leader. That's why we learn about the 5 A's and all the peacemaker lessons. If you're not in grade 5, you may not know, and they are teaching us what is right. Sooner or later, their lies will eventually catch up, and their pants will be on fire. Another example is that you may be in this meeting or another important decision-making place, and you are to make a decision. Sometimes it may be easy to choose. For example, whether you want a pink notebook or a blue notebook for boys or girls, that's pretty obvious for most people. But at other times, you could be going through so much pressure to make a good decision. Imagine you are a movie director and then you said your movie will be out in 2 days. Your movie is super popular and people are waiting for this very moment your movie is gonna be released. Some already bought tickets. Unfortunately, you accidentally deleted a part of your movie and have to film it again. Will you tell the sit-ins and sorry and the movie will be late? Or will you do it again that day without special side effects because that is one of the most important parts? Do you see how as a leader you will need good decision-making skills to be responsible? To be a good leader in life, you will have to be kind and encouraging. How will your friends or people around you react if you act like you couldn't care less? The article, 10 Characteristics of a Student Leader, says, student leaders recognize that everyone has strengths and weaknesses. An example from my life is when I had a friend who was really good at writing. She was in grade 4, but already wrote grade 5 or 6 writings. I looked up on her because not only was she great at writing, but a great everyday leader. Now that I think about this, she was really kind, encouraging, and a great helper to everyone. I was young, and I hated writing classes because I just felt like I was bad at it. But she insisted that she read it. She gave me comments and encouraged me. This is why nowadays I really like writing. Take Martin Luther King for another example. He encouraged others to follow their dreams and fight for their rights. He told them that no matter what color they had, they were all people. Do you think Martin Luther King Jr. told people things that brought them down? No. Of course, he did mess up a few times because obviously no one's perfect. But did he purposely try to bring them down? That's another no. He encouraged people to do the right thing by boycotting the buses because the white people treated the black people badly. Last but not least, to be a great student leader, it is important you are a good communicator. What I mean by this is that you have to be both a good listener and speaker. Imagine someone who listens well, but suddenly says, "Shush," when you are about to speak. To add on, a good communicator doesn't mean that they just simply listen and speak well, but the words and actions they use to do that matters too. For example, think about if you're talking to a friend, but then they say something like, "Shush, nobody cares about what you think," and then takes their turn to speak. That is what most people consider disrespectful talk. The people are not suitable to be a good leader. Like, take Adolf Hitler, for example. He was a great communicator, but not good at actually doing what he said. That's why I said to be kind and encouraging, my second reason. Also, do you remember the reasons I mentioned above of being responsible and being kind and encouraging? This reason is especially important because if you don't know how to communicate with respectfulness, how will you be kind and encouraging? And if you are not a good communicator, how will you share your thoughts responsibly? This is why you need to have good communication skills to be a good leader. Don't you agree with me? In conclusion, everyone can be an amazing everyday leader if they have the three most important characteristics. Leaders don't have to be a walking dictionary or have a mind like a steel trap. You need to be a strong leader by being respectful, being kind and encouraging, and be a good communicator. Please don't doubt yourself. I know everyone deep down have these qualities. You may not follow these characteristics all the time, but no one's perfect after all. Now that you've learned this, according to the mystery science team Doug, have fun and stay curious. Bye, and follow these three characteristics to be an everyday leader.
Wow, that was really great, Jimin. I really liked all like the scenarios that you mentioned, especially the movie director one, right? And then also your quotes from other leaders. You have a really big vocabulary. I'm really impressed. Really good job. All right, next up, we have Leo. Go ahead and start when you're ready.
Dear students and fifth grade Turtle Academies, have you ever wondered what an everyday leader is? If you want to make life better for others in your community or learn about being a leader, you should listen to this. Being an everyday leader is an important topic that you will use in your life. Today, I will be telling you about what I think an everyday leader is, how I'm applying this to my life, and what it means for our communities. First, I will talk about what I think an everyday leader is. An everyday leader is someone who shows interest in helping others. I think a good everyday leader should be a good decision maker. They should be honest and they should be open-minded. Everyday leaders need to be good decision makers because they have to make quick decisions under pressure. And they need to be honest because they need to be truthful to make others follow them. They also need to be open-minded because they must listen to others' ideas to improve their own ideas. There are other examples of how everyday leaders need these qualities. An everyday leader does not have to be someone who does big things like setting up a charity for homeless people. An everyday leader is someone who does not have to have a high status like a manager or politician like someone like Joe Biden. And they do not need to be rich or strong like Elon Musk or John Cena. And they can be an ordinary person. An everyday leader can do tiny things that make a big impact. For example, Mother Teresa once said, I alone cannot change the world, but I can cast a stone across the water to create many ripples. This means that doing small things will cause others to do the same, which adds up to a lot. Now, I will tell you about what I'm trying to do and what you can do to be an everyday leader. In my life and your life, the three qualities that I mentioned earlier are important for you to do. For example, you and I can be good decision makers by choosing to eat vegetables instead of Yum Yum or Lay's, which are very yummy. Choosing to eat fruits and vegetables instead of junk food helps your body be healthier and makes your life easier by not having to work to become healthy again. You and I can be honest by telling your parents that you intentionally spend all night playing Brawl Stars and watching TV because it was fun and that it wasn't the right thing to do, instead of coming up with an excuse. Being honest like that helps you because others will become friends with you for it, and admitting your mistakes makes others forgive you, which feels good. Also, you and I can be open-minded by listening to your friends' suggestions, such as, we should show more about what happens to the aliens in our comic book, etc. You could make that change, and the result could be much better than it would have been if you hadn't listened to them. Being open-minded helps because you listen to others' ideas and not just your own. This is how I've been trying to apply the everyday leader qualities to my life, and you can too. Now, I will talk about what being an everyday leader means for a community if everyone has the qualities of an everyday leader. First, being a good decision maker helps a community by making better results because good decisions lead to better results. For example, people make good decisions by doing many things such as not using drugs or breaking the law. By doing this, it makes the community a happier place. Being honest helps a community by building trust. Being honest is admitting when you are wrong, and this makes others trust you because they trust that you will tell the truth and admit your mistakes. Building trust reduces conflict because people trust each other more, and conflict is solved easier because people admit when they are wrong, which makes the community a better, happier place to be in. Finally, being open-minded is being open to others or accepting people. For example, if someone had a really serious and realistic idea and someone else had a really silly but creative idea, being open-minded would help you be open to the silly but creative idea rather than just saying
to be more serious because we don't take creative ideas, even if the serious idea is better. This helps others feel accepted and happier, making the community a better place. And that is what I think an everyday leader is, what you and I can do to be an everyday leader, and what being an everyday leader means for a community. If you are convinced that this is what you are, what you believe, then take action. The world is most likely running out of good leaders, and we need them. And you should step up to be an everyday leader by being a good decision maker, being honest, and being open-minded. You will not be disappointed.
All right, thank you, Leo. That was a really well-written essay, like both of you. And I just have like a little extra question. It's not in the script. Who is someone that you look up to?
People who are in charge of me.
People? Oh, like your parents?
My parents and my teachers, because like it's kind of hard to decide who you look up to.
Right.
Because like usually you just know what to do.
Uh-huh.
So usually, I guess I look up to my inner subconsciousness.
Oh, right. Inner subconsciousness. Okay. Oh, you, Jimin?
Most of the time, I look up to my friends more than my parents.
Oh.
Because, like, I feel like I don't really like people who actually, like, boss me around so much. And then, but my friends, Lunlun, Nana, and Pai-R don't actually boss me around.
Yeah.
They just actually, like, help me understand and things like that.
Yeah.
But mostly, like Leo said, I also look up to my inner self so that I can believe in myself.
Okay. Self-confidence. All right. Thank you both.
Great response from Leo. And yes, the world definitely needs great leaders. And I won't lie, like, leaders that are leading us right now, like, some of them aren't doing so well. So yeah, good job pointing that out and good responses.
Okay, thank you everybody. What a great discussion on leadership. We heard some inspiring insights from our principal and two incredible fifth graders who showed us that leadership isn't just about being in charge. It's about setting a good example, helping others, making a positive impact, and last but not least, eating your vegetables. No matter your age, you can be a leader in your own way by taking action. So as you go through your day, think about how you can lead with kindness, confidence, and integrity. Okay, we'll be right back with part one of our adventure story right after this short PSA announcement.
One, two, three, four!
ICS invites you to a classical music concert, Echoes of Elegance. Enjoy soothing and thrilling works from Bach, Sibelius, Dvorak, a Mozart symphony, and more. Played by the combined forces of ICS High School Orchestra and the Emmanuel Orchestra. Emmanuel Orchestra is a ministry of the Music for Life Foundation under the direction of the esteemed Dr. Krit Niramitam. For more than 20 years, the Music for Life Foundation has offered classical music education in Klong Toei, Bangkok's largest slum. Some of their players have won scholarships to Mahidol University and returned to teach with the foundation. They have 5 levels of orchestra, and ICS has the privilege of playing alongside some of their top musicians. Dr. Krit and our own orchestra director, Mrs. Sara, will share the podium. Admission is free at the door. Donations will be accepted to benefit the Music for Life Foundation. Join us on Thursday, March 20, 6:30 p.m. at Christ Church, Bangkok, Convent Road, Siloam. I hope to see you there.
And we are back with our second segment. For the next 10 episodes, we'll be bringing you another adventure story, just like we did last season. Our new story is a sequel to last season's story titled The Secrets of El Dorado, Uncovering a Legacy of Greed and Deception. You can listen to our first story in episodes 55 through 64. The Secrets of El Dorado story is also available as a paperback book on Amazon.com or as a digital PDF download on our website at studentsincorporated.com. Our new story includes a few characters you'll recognize from the past, as well as a whole new set of characters. So buckle up as we dive back into a world of intrigue, danger, and mystery. Now, and without further ado, we bring you the first part of our 10-part sequel to The Secrets of El Dorado, titled Legends of the Yucatan, Uncovering a Mystery of Love and Betrayal.
Thank you.
Our story begins in the quaint and famous, well now even more famous, town of Coloma, California, which is located in El Dorado County. Coloma's significance resides in the fact that it's known as ground zero of where the California Gold Rush started in the mid-1800s. Coloma and the surrounding area is not only etched in the history as the starting place of the California Gold Rush, but is now also known as the little town that helped expose one of the largest and longest U.S. government scandals of all time. The scandal is now known worldwide as the Great California Gold Rush Scandal. The region and county has seen growth among visiting tourists. Over the last year and a half since the Gold Rush scandal broke, tourism has almost doubled, which has contributed to much higher revenues for local businesses. Coloma City Council members have had to hold several extra meetings with real estate developers, city planners, zoning officials, and contractors to develop plans for infrastructure improvements, road expansions, and new business-friendly zones. El Dorado College, located in Coloma, has seen a jump in enrollment since the scandal was exposed as well. Curiosity and intrigue have brought many more students from all over the United States to the college to study. Both the history and science departments have seen a significant increase in enrollment. Even though the county of El Dorado and the town of Coloma are experiencing population growth, the region still holds on to its cultural and historical charm.
I'm Lily, remember me? I'm thankful for all the outpouring of support and love I've received since being part of the group who helped expose the truth of the Gold Rush scandal. Because of my involvement in helping expose this scandal, I'll be granted a permanent green card to live and work in the U.S. upon completing all my studies. I've had some weird flashbacks the last year and a half of my time being held in the tunnels, which have helped the FBI piece other small details together over time. I'm still connected with Ava, Ethan, and Sierra, and of course Professor Hawthorne at the college. I completed my bachelor degree in forensic science from El Dorado College, and I've started my master's degree. With the influx of new students, came more demands for expanded programs at the college. So, I'm part of the first cohort in the newly developed forensic science master's degree program, which I'm super excited about. I'm also taking a few extra classes in the history department, as I really would love to specialize in a career that does forensic investigation of past events, places, and artifacts. I was able to secure a TA position with Professor Hawthorne and Professor Case. I really enjoy having my feet in both the history and science worlds, and I just really love to learn.
Hey there, it's Ava Turner here. You may remember me from my previous adventure. I helped break the series of stories of the California Gold Rush scandal when I was working at the Sacramento Bee. I'm not even 30 years old yet, and I feel like I've lived a lifetime already with the amount of exposure and opportunities I've had since those stories came out. The events and circumstances of that adventure have changed my career and life in so many positive ways. I've only been out of college for 2.5 years, and I now work as an independent writer and investigative reporter. I'd say that 90% of my contract work now comes from Reuters. Reuters is a valued source of news of which they then source to newspaper all over the country, like the Sacramento Bee and hundreds of other papers both online and offline. In fact, Reuters is quite famously known as the first to break the news in 1865 that President Abraham Lincoln had been assassinated. I'm so honored to be working with them and appreciate the arrangement we have together.
Hello, I'm Amanda Chase. My students call me Prof. Chase. I'm 36 years old and new to the area. I accepted a position at El Dorado College last year and now help teach several classes in the history and science departments. I'm a rare person as I've done 2 doctoral degrees, one in general history and one in general science. I think that's why I landed this faculty position at El Dorado College, as I'm qualified to teach in both the history and science departments. I'm married and my husband is a lawyer who specializes in business and corporate law. We have 2 elementary age children and we are originally from New York. My husband and I were inspired by the events and bravery of the people involved with exposing the Gold Rush scandal. It was good timing as we both were looking to make a change and wanted to relocate. After reading all the articles and watching all the news reports and interviews, I knew we had to be out there. Anyway, when I saw that the college was hiring for a new faculty position and that person would be working in the same department as the great Professor Hawthorne, I knew I wanted this position. And now, here we are, a year later, and I've made it through my first year at the college. Oh, by the way, fun fact as well. My kids attend the school where Sierra Reese now teaches art. You know, Sierra? She was also part of the gang who helped expose the corrupt officials from the Gold Rush scandal.
Hola, I'm Thomas Froles. I'm a 52 years old man. I'm a family man. Always have been. My students call me Professor Tommy, which is Prof. Tommy. I'm on staff at UNAM, and I've been here for quite a long time now. Professor Hawthorne and I go way back. In fact, James and I worked together on several dig projects here in Mexico and Central America years ago. I'm well connected at the university and the museum. My university department, the Department of Archaeology and Anthropology, works closely with the museum, and much of our work is directly related to the city and state cultural and heritage type initiatives. Let's just say the Mexican Ministry of Cultural Affairs is one of our biggest supporters and financiers. Tony Garcia over at the museum is a good friend of mine. I helped to mentor him as he gained seniorities at the museum. We probably grab lunch together at least once a month. I'm surprised he still has time with as large a staff he has now over there.
Hello, my name is Anthony Garcia, and I'm the lead curator for the Museum of National Anthropology in Mexico City. My close friends just call me Tony. I'm 44 years old, and I've worked at this museum for almost 24 years now. I started working here as an intern while I was finishing my college degree and never left. I guess you could say that I've almost made it to the top rung of the corporate ladder here. I routinely meet with my boss, the museum director, and prominent city and government officials regarding all things culture and heritage. And I get to interact with the UNAM professors and students on a regular basis as well. I learn how to curate some of the rarest artifacts and relics from around the world and bring them to this museum for shows and installations. We do, however, specialize in rare relics and artifacts of the ancient Mayans and have done a lot of study of the Aztec civilization. I love my job. Let's just say I don't plan on going anywhere. I converted a section of my large corner office into a studio apartment, as I'm often here overnight working. Chances are if you need to find me, you always find me at the museum somewhere.
Hello, I'm Miranda Martinez, and I'm 28 years old. I was born and raised in Mexico City with family ties to Texas. I have a younger brother and a younger sister. My younger brother plays for one of Mexico City's pro soccer teams, and my sister is studying pre-med. I'm a graduate of UNAM's undergraduate and graduate programs of history and anthropology, and I'm one of the youngest team leaders the university has ever sent out in the field. One of my biggest accomplishments, besides being the first female in my family to graduate with honors from UNAM, was that I helped lead the team that discovered the now famous and very rare jade vessel artifact. You'll hear about that later. My family is pretty well connected among the elites in Mexico City. My mother and father own and manage several high-end restaurants that have been featured on multiple international food programs. The restaurants regularly host some of Mexico's most influential politicians and business moguls. Although I grew up in the world of elites and influence, I don't really enjoy it. I'd rather be out in the countryside learning about our past so I can help preserve it, not only for my generation, but for future generations as well.
Hi, my name is David Silva. I'm 31 years old, well, almost 32 to be exact. I'm a dual U.S.-Mexican citizen. I was born in Mexico. My father's American and my mother is Mexican. My father moved to Mexico City for work, where he met my mom. They then got married and had me 2 years later, which was a big surprise to both of them at the time. At least, that's what they tell me, and maybe that's why I'm an only child. My father then relocated us to the US right before I started middle school. I spent my middle school and high school years attending school in Los Angeles, which was a big adjustment for me. My parents still live and work there. I had a knack for swimming and won several high-profile swim meets in high school. I didn't know what I wanted to do after high school, so I joined the U.S. Navy. I knew that if I wanted to go to university sometime, that the best way to get that paid for was through the GI Bill offered by the U.S. government. While in the Navy, I trained and worked as a rescue and recovery diver, which took me all around the world, mostly to natural disaster zones. We were often contracted by both private and public companies, and even sometimes other governments, for our services, some of which have been classified. I left the Navy after 10 years and was quickly recruited by the Mexican government as a private citizen to help recruit and train new dive technicians for the Mexican Navy. My former senior Navy officer recommended me when he found I was leaving. I also accept contracts for dives from pirate companies in the university. In fact, I was a diver on the team that found the golden mass of Chichen Itza. You'll hear about that later.
Professor Hawthorne here. You probably remember me from my previous adventure with Ava, Lily, Ethan, and Sierra. The last 2 years have been quite crazy, good and bad. One of my closest friends and colleagues at the college, Bill Sharpton, was charged and convicted of multiple felonies and is now serving prison time for his role in the Gold Rush scandal. Other prominent city and state leaders were also caught and convicted. The public's trust in our city, county, and state leaders has been greatly diminished because of the Great Gold Rush scandal. Well, this is what the national network news agencies have named it now. I still get the feeling there are others involved who haven't yet been caught. Well, it's in the hands of the FBI now. Moving on to some of the good things that have happened in the last 2 years, my wife and I have had the opportunity to travel around the country, along with several of the others, to tell the story of our involvement. I'm thankful to HarperCollins for picking up my book, The Secrets of El Dorado, and sending us on a book tour. We had a great time meeting so many people all over the country and are thrilled to tell our story, and we're glad it inspired them. El Dorado College enrollment has grown, so it's good to have a new faculty member, Amanda Chase, joined my team, and she helps teach several different classes. With this newfound 15 seconds of fame, many of our old friends and work colleagues have reached out to see how things are going. I even got reconnected with an old friend from UNAM in Mexico City, which you'll hear about soon.
To conclude the preface, and before we get started with the story, I want to give you some details about UNAM and a few other places the story will take us. UNAM is short for the National Autonomous University of Mexico. It's ranked as Mexico's number one university and ranks as number two in all of Latin America. UNAM has an enrollment of over 360,000 students. Popular tourist attractions and archaeological sites in Mexico are sprinkled along the Yucatan Peninsula. Cancun, being the popular destination for tourists and holiday goers, sits on the east coast of the peninsula and is about a 20-hour drive from Mexico City, or just a 2.5-hour flight. The Yucatan is full of ancient archaeological sites. One well-known site is known as Chichen Itza, one of the largest Mayan cities. It's just over 90 minutes from the city of Mérida, and just over 2 hours from Cancun and Playa del Carmen. Chichen Itza is a notable site of ancient Mayan ruins. At its center is the massive step pyramid known as El Castillo, or the Temple of Kukulkan. This ancient city thrived between 600 AD and the 1200s, and its stone carvings have endured over time. Key structures, such as the Ball Court, the Temple of the Warriors, and the Wall of Skulls, still display detailed carvings from the past. Nightly sound and light shows illuminate the building's sophisticated geometry, giving visitors a spectacular show. Another location popular with tourists and archaeologists is Tulum. Tulum is a resort town on Mexico's Caribbean coast and south of Cancun. The 13th-century walled Mayan archaeological site at Tulum National Park overlooks the sea. It incorporates the clifftop castillo built as a watchtower and the Templo de las Pinturas with a partially restored mural. Inland, the Coba archaeological site has pyramid-shaped temples with views over the surrounding jungle. Finally, Calakmul is another ancient site of the Mayan people and is located near the border of Guatemala and Belize. Over 6,700 ancient structures have been discovered and identified in this area, which date back to 1000 BC. The entire site is located in the protected tropical forest of Calakmul in Campeche, Mexico. This area has been designated as a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Because of this designation, many of the ancient structures have been hidden once again by the imposing jungle forest. Few tourists venture into this location because of its remote and less accessible location. And now onto our story. Part 1, The Proposal.
Professor Hawthorne looks down at his watch, and then he glances up at the clock in the back of the room. Hmm, I guess the battery's finally died in that old clock. The professor mumbles to himself as he starts to pack up his papers and laptop. As he carefully slips his laptop in his very worn leather shoulder bag, he clears his throat, and then he says with a loud voice, Okay, everyone. There is about 10 minutes remaining in class to finish up. Make sure to read the final instructions before turning in your work. And don't forget to have a great holiday break. And I'll see you next year. The professor smirks a bit as he says that last part, hoping at least one of the students would laugh. Or at least crack a smile and look back. Nope, not this year again. Maybe the joke has worn itself out over the countless years he's used it with his last class on the last day before the college goes on break for Christmas and New Year's. The professor looks up as Lily Chan approaches the front table as he's closing his bag and putting on his jacket. Tough crowd today, he says to Lily.
Yes, they were. They were probably just tired and happy that their final exam is over. Lily responds as she hands in some leftover papers that were left behind by several eager to leave early students. She then asks, is there anything else we need to do today?
The professor responds, not that I can think of, and if there is something, well, it can wait until we get back from break. That's the thing about work. It'll always be right here where you left it. It's not going anywhere. Professor Hawthorne and Lily follow the last two students out of the classroom, turn off the light, and shut the door behind them. As they walk down the hallway toward the elevator, the professor says, well, how does it feel to complete your first semester as a TA? Very different from when you were a student, right?
Honestly, it's been great. I mean, I didn't really know what to expect as far as the day-to-day responsibilities, but so far I've really enjoyed it. And as a bonus, I'm able to receive 3 extra college credits. And by the way, I really appreciate you allowing me to join your department. Thanks for putting in the word for me.
Ah, you're welcome, and that's good to hear, Professor Hawthorne says. The entire TA experience can be a make it or break it, depending on who you're TAing for. I mean, I feel really bad for the poor souls who get stuck TAing in the English department.
Yeah, that's what the rumor is around here. Don't TA in the English department, Lily says with a half smile and then adds, Professor Chase has been great as well. She told me she loves it when she has the opportunity to mentor TAs in her classes. Lily makes eye contact with one of the 2 students up ahead who is holding the elevator and then says, thanks for holding that for us.
The professor then says, you all go ahead without me. I've got to stop back in my office before I leave anyway. Oh, by the way, Lily, if you find yourself without plans for Christmas or New Year's, please reach out to me or the missus. We usually host several students who can't make it back home for the holidays.
Lily nods her head, smiles and says, okay, thank you and will do, as the elevator doors close.
The professor makes his way to his office and notices that just about every other classroom and office is already closed, dark, and empty, except for Amanda's office a few doors down. Well, this place clears out fast this time of year, he says this as he unlocks and enters his office, while the faint sound of a vacuum sweeper hums in the background. As he enters his office, he notices that there is one last manila envelope resting upright in the mail receiving basket, which sits on a chair just inside the door on the right, and just under the mail receiving slot in the wall. I'll grab that on my way out, he thinks to himself. After finishing a few last-minute things, the professor grabs the manila envelope, turns off the light, pushes the lock button on the back of the doorknob, and then closes the door behind him. The professor makes it a point to stop at Amanda's office to see if she actually is still here, or if it's the cleaning staff that are in her office finishing up before break. He peeks through the door and sees Amanda packing her backpack while sitting at her very tiny desk. Oh, hey there, the professor says. Looks like you're getting out of Dodge as well.
Oh, hey, professor, Amanda replies. Getting out of Dodge? Haven't heard that one before.
Yeah, it's something my father and I used to say to each other when we were excited or ready to leave a place. We used to watch that old Western show, Gunsmoke, together when I was a kid. And that saying was used a lot on the show, even though neither of us had ever visited Dodge City, Kansas. The professor responds with a small chuckle. He continues, Lily just left and said she has really enjoyed TAing for the department, and especially for you. Anyway, I thought you'd like to know you've really made an impact on her in her short time here so far. So thank you. Oh, and by the way, the contractor spoke with me this morning and said that your new office would be completed by the time you returned after break, so you don't have to put up with this small closet of a space anymore.
Wow, that's so nice to hear. Lily's been so helpful in so many areas, not just with typical TA things like helping do attendance, checking work, and so forth, but she's also given my family and I great advice about the town and surrounding area. I know we've only just been here a year and a half now, but my family and I feel very connected and grounded already with the community and the school. As Amanda gets up, turns out her light, and walks out of her small closet-sized office space, and she continues as Professor Hawthorne walks next to her down the hallway toward the exit of the building. Our two girls love their new school. Byron and I made the right choice by enrolling them in that new charter school you and your wife recommended. Miss Sierra Reese is their art teacher. I've got to say, it's pretty cool to be surrounded by the heroes of the famous California Gold Rush scandal. I didn't think that would happen when I accepted this job. As Professor Hawthorne and Professor Chase exits the building together and into the almost empty parking lot, Amanda then says, "And yes, I'll be ready to move out of that small closet I call my office as soon as the other office is ready."
Ha, I'm sure you will be. Think of it as a late Christmas present from the college. The professor says this with a smile as he turns to walk towards his parked car. He hesitates for a moment and then turns around. "Oh, and one more thing. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and your family."
"Thank you. And you too. Please give my best to your wife," Amanda responds as she turns and walks to her car.
As Professor Hawthorne opens the driver's door on his old Bronco, he looks down at the envelope he's been carrying since he left his office. He glances down at the top left corner of the front of the envelope where the return address has been affixed. The address reads, "The National Autonomous University of Mexico, School of Political Social Sciences, Mexico City, Mexico." This large and famous school is better known by its nickname, which is UNAM. It can't be, the professor says to himself as he starts his engine, puts the Bronco in drive, and then leaves campus, ready to enjoy the next 4 weeks of holiday break. Shortly later, the professor arrives home to an empty house, remembering his wife was working at a local charity fundraising event downtown today. He sits down on one of the stools at the island in the kitchen and places the envelope on the table. His phone then dings, almost on cue, like he had planned it that way. As he is opening the envelope and pulling out the contents, he looks down at his phone and sees that he's got a new email, and it's sent to his personal email account. That's funny, he thinks. I don't give that address out to many people, so I wonder who that could be. He focuses on the papers that he pulled out of the envelope and scans them until he finds exactly what he's looking for at the bottom of the second document. "There you are," the professor says with a grin as he reads the name at the bottom of the letter. "Sincerely, Professor Tommy Flores, UNAM School of Political Social Sciences, Mexico City, Mexico." Hawthorne notices that the two documents in the envelope appear to be a formal invitation and a proposal directed to both El Dorado College and him personally. He picks up his phone and opens the email that had just arrived. He notices that the from address is tommyf@unam.edu.mx. The email message is quite short and to the point and reads, "James, this is Tommy. Long time, man. Hope you received the official invite from me already. Also send an official invite to your college dean and administrative staff. After you read it, please let me know if this is something that can happen. I didn't have your work email, only your personal email address. Anyways, I'm hoping you still check this account. Let me know. All the best, Tommy." Professor Hawthorne scans the two documents again and more thoroughly this time. The first document is like a cover letter introducing several different people. UNAM is a higher educational institution and one of the more well-known museums in Mexico City. The second page or document is the official invitation and proposal, which consists of three main things: guest lecturing, sitting on a Q&A panel, and an official invitation to an honorary guest to a formal event being held at the Museum of National Anthropology, Mexico's most prominent natural history museum. The museum event will include the unveiling of two rare, somewhat controversial Mayan artifacts that were recently discovered by an archaeological team from UNAM. The artifacts will be turned over to the museum for further study and research purposes. This could be a fun experience, the professor says out loud as he finds two more important details towards the end of the second document. The first is that the events would be happening during the first and second week of May, which is a week before both UNAM and El Dorado College hold graduation ceremonies. The other detail is an invitation to bring a small group of like-minded students from the El Dorado College and the other California Gold Rush scandal heroes. Hawthorne thinks to himself, this is quite the proposal, especially since travel and food expenses would be paid for by one of UNAM's many cultural exchange grants. I like this idea a lot. I just hope the dean will be keen on this as well. Professor Hawthorne puts the documents down and eyes the fresh pumpkin bread loaf sitting on the kitchen counter, grabs a fork from the drawer and says to himself, well, it's time to start celebrating the holidays early, and I know just where to start.
And that ends part one. Stay tuned for next week as we bring you part two of Legends of the Yucatan.
Wow, what an episode. We explored the power of leadership, heard inspiring stories from young voices, and kicked off an epic new adventure. Whether it's leading with kindness or embarking on a thrilling quest, there's always a new challenge to take on. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, keep leading, keep exploring, and we'll see you in the next episode. Stay tuned for our next episode as we dive back into the topic of business and then bring part two of our adventure story, Legends of the Yucatan. And as always, this podcast would not be possible without the hard work and support of our international student production team.
All music and sound effects are courtesy of Pixabay.com, a vibrant community of creatives, sharing copyright-free images, videos, and music.
And we are signing off until next time. We are Students Incorporated, because your voice matters.